Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. On September 30th, many people will commemorate Orange Shirt Day. It is a time to reflect on the horrors of residential schools and to recommit to truth and reconciliation with Indigenous people within our community and across the country. On today's show, you will hear from Tanner Simpson, Chief of Alderville First Nation. He brings a different perspective. For many years, he has worked on researching residential schools, locating graves, finding names, gathering information about those impacted. He knows residential schools intimately. He will shed a fresh light on Orange Shirt Day and its meaning. It is my pleasure to welcome Alderville First Nations Chief Tanner Simpson to Consider This Northumberland. Welcome, Chief.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
What does Orange Shirt Day mean to you personally, not as a politician or as a community leader, but as an individual?
To me, Orange Shirt Day is a culmination of where we have come and how far we have come, starting in the late 1990s, when I was working for a private company. We started the residential schools litigation research. It was brand new. The Minister of Indian Affairs at the time, Jane Stewart, had apologized for what had happened at the schools. And that started the floodgates of litigation against the Crown once the acknowledgement of wrongdoings was admitted. So at that point, generally residential schools weren't well known in the country to the larger population. So when I started, I was still young. I was still in university, and I saw it transform from the litigation to alternative dispute resolution. And then eventually in 2006, there was the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement that was signed with the Assembly of First Nations and Indian Affairs. So that's when all of the research moved over to just settlement agreement research, where we just needed to research the students' records. And for me, I was well invested. I started my own company in 2000, where we became the lead company doing this research for the survivors and for the government. So to see it come to where it is now, it means that all of these wrongdoings and concerns that the survivors have had are finally being acknowledged on the national scale. And especially when we're starting to find the unmarked burials, which is a project that I led for the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation for 2 years, where we identified all of the children that were archivally, we were able to identify that passed away at the schools. We identified missing children. And the next step is identifying the burials. And the next step would be, what are we going to do with these burials? Are we going to leave them in place? Do the communities want to basically bring them back into their community and give them a proper burial? So it's going to be up to the communities and the individuals themselves on what the next step forwards is. But to see Orange Shirt Day become what it is now, it's I'm not going to say it's a dream come true, but it's just a very important recognition on a national level that is long overdue.
It sounds to me like you've been intimately involved in this right from the very, very beginning. And you've talked about it in terms of a process. How, though, has it impacted you in terms of how you feel and emotionally to have been so close to it, to watch it unfold, to be exposed to all the stories and the background?
Well, as the father of two teenage girls, they're both 15 and 13 right now. When they were becoming at around when they were 5 and just turning 6, it to me it was very emotional knowing that historically that would have been when the government and the RCMP would be coming to just literally seize the children, and for the next 10 years I wouldn't be able to see them very much. Maybe on Christmas, maybe on summer a little bit, but knowing that. This was the way it was for our people for over 100 years, really affected me. I felt guilty being able to have this time with my children. I felt guilty knowing that this was something that was denied to so many hundreds of thousands of children in our past. So to me, it hit home that way. I treasure every single moment I've got with my kids. And it's just something that, as a parent, you can really understand the emotional turmoil that this would have caused. So it's I think every parent, every person should feel the horrors that this was.
In case there are listeners who may not fully appreciate the significance of Orange Shirt Day, could you remind us about what we're commemorating?
Well, we're commemorating the children who didn't come home, the children that did come home but lost a part of themselves in the schools. And specifically, Orange Shirt Day is based around the experience of Phyllis Webstead, who, when she was preparing to go off to residential schools, she was given a nice new orange shirt that quickly became her favorite shirt. And she was going to proudly wear it around the school. And then when she arrived at the school, everything that she had brought was seized, thrown in the garbage, and she never saw that orange shirt again. So she was denied the ability to wear her new orange shirt at school, because she was assuming that it was going to be like a regular school, but instead it was an institution of assimilation and genocide. So all of these children had to go through this from a young age, from 6 to 16, and we honor them with Orange Shirt Day, because it's something that we can never forget that happened, and we've got to keep that memory alive, because it wasn't too long ago that these schools closed down. 1997 is when the last school closed, and that was Gordon's Residential School in Saskatchewan.
Did you or anyone in your family go to residential school?
No, fortunately, we were spared. Here in Alderville, where I live, we had what was called an Indian Day School. So that was for the government, that was good enough for the children to attend. But prior to that, Alderville was actually the home to Canada's first industrial school, which was the precursor to the residential school system. So our band office today is located on the site of the very first industrial school in Canada. So that's something every day when I go to work and I walk in there, I carry that with me. And knowing that we're on a very historically significant piece of land.
Did you attend the day school?
No, the day school closed in the late 1960s. And after that point, all the students either went to the Roseneath Public School or went in town. But personally, myself, I grew up in London, Ontario. So I went to the school system in there.
What was it like for you going to school? What sort of things did you face as an Indigenous person at a public school?
Well, back in that time in the 1980s, the understanding of Indigenous issues was quite low. They had the Hollywood and cartoon idea. We were basically a caricature. So if I did have the courage to bring up my Indigenous ancestry, I was basically ridiculed. I would get the kids running around with hooting and hollering and doing that thing where they hit their mouth and they whoop it up. And so I knew that that was wrong. They would say, go back to your longhouse, or say, you don't live in a longhouse, you can't be Indian. So it was definitely met with derision and ridicule. And so I basically learned not to talk about being First Nations.
What sort of impact did that have on you in that early stages of your life facing such racism?
Well, it let me know that I was different. I wasn't experiencing the average or the typical experience that a child would be having. It made me understand that we obviously had different histories. And then that made me ask questions. Why do we have different histories? So this is what got me into the career that I launched down, which was forming my company, Wampum Records. And we look into all these issues from historical backgrounds, from cultural, from societal backgrounds. As an anthropologist, I'm really interested in society and culture. So I just wanted to, I had so many questions that I wanted answered. So I proceeded to go live my life in a way that I could get the answers to these questions.
Can you share with us a bit about your own discovery of your Indigenous identity and how you cultivated that?
Well, again, as a child in the 80s, growing up in the 80s and the 90s, there wasn't too many outlets in the city to learn about the culture. There were friendship centers, but we didn't go to them very often. So I did look at the media, and then you would try to pick good movies versus the bad movies. So a lot of my sense of who we were did come from Hollywood. Like you've got your Last of the Mohicans, I want to say, or your Dances with Wolves, you know, those were like seminal ones. But then I started listening to the music. I started going to the powwows. And that's when I got a real sense of our culture, who we were, knowing that, you know, the sound of the drum, it really affects you. You can feel it in your heart. So that's when I think I was truly informed about who we were. I could sense it. I could feel it. And I was very happy that I did attend the powwow at a young age. And so from there, I think I didn't want to get it wrong. I wanted to make sure that that I had all the information moving forward.
You mentioned earlier you have two daughters. What do you do to help educate them about their culture, their history?
Well, living in Alderville and having them grow up in Alderville, it's something that's always been around them. So it's a lot easier when you're surrounded by Indigenous people. We go to communities, Indigenous gatherings. So I think that they've kind of absorbed it naturally. I've always told them, I've gone against, I guess, what's being taught in the classes about history. So I inform them about the treaties and the lack of understanding around them, the true history of how we came to be, that Canada wasn't just always here and that we were just always, you know, pushed to the bottom of society, that in fact, you know, we have a strong, proud history for tens of thousands of years here in North America. And that what we are experiencing now is actually just a quite a recent blip on the history of our people. And now we're just coming to terms with it. But I fight the narrative that's generally prevalent in Canadian society.
There are many experts who say the impact of residential schools is transgenerational or intergenerational trauma. Especially with your background, what is your experience with this aspect, either in your family or within the community?
Well, that's a very good question. When you think of intergenerational trauma, you think of it as the children who are born to survivors who didn't go to the school themselves. And the survivors have that ingrained knowledge of abuse, and it breaks bonds between parents and children. So you have this aspect where we, in a lot of ways, we're still hurting. We're still trying to heal ourselves. But historically, you would have had several generations of family members who attended these residential schools. So you could be one, the sixth or seventh in your generation, your line that has gone through these schools. So the damage that residential schools caused was deep. I mean, its purpose was to not only assimilate us, but also to get rid of us. So when you go through that for so long, you're going to come out damaged. And you don't just all of a sudden forget everything. And when you leave the school and start living a normal life with your culture, like the culture has been lost, the language was lost. We're getting that back now. But, you know, without your culture, like, how can you be a strong people? So it's going hand in hand, relearning our culture, relearning the language. That's paramount to healing and going forward.
Much of the focus on Orange Shirt Day is on the past. What issues do children in Alderville or other Indigenous communities face today?
Well, I think that there's still concerns about what's being taught in the schools about Indigenous culture. There are still a lot of deniers that residential schools were a bad thing. We know that there's been some issues with teachers saying as much. So we need to always combat that. So we don't want the children hearing one thing from us and then going to like non-Indigenous schools and hearing something different that that basically takes the the carpet right out from under you, and then they don't know. So we need to make sure that the narrative stays the same and across the board. So children need to be children. That's the one thing we have to take away is that our children for generations were denied being allowed to be children. So when you think of Orange Shirt Day, it's not really a celebration, but it is a celebration that we are now liberated, that children can be children. So I think we should focus on, just giving the children the best possible foot up in life. And we just want to celebrate them. But again, it's not supposed to be a celebratory day, but in a way, it is.
Where do you see the need for new advocacy in Indigenous communities and places like Alderville?
Well, I think moving forward, our Williams Treaty Settlement Agreement that we reached in 2018 was a reaffirmation of our treaty rights on our lands, our traditional lands. So my grandfather was at the signing of the original Williams Treaty signing 100 years ago. And now, for that pretty much 100-year period, our treaty rights were stomped on. They were crushed. Nothing that we were allowed to do, we were put on these reserves, and the government controlled every single facet of our lives. So with the new settlement agreements, the governments, the federal and provincial governments, apologized for this. So that means that moving forward, they are going to try to keep the treaty relationship strong. So this means consultation on anything that has to do within our treaty territory. So we are getting engaged by power companies, construction companies. Anytime they're doing something, they call us to see if we have concerns, which we always have archaeological concerns. Environmental concerns are big. The one thing that we're really upset about right now is Doug Ford's decision to take lands out of the green belt and put into development, which we just think is a completely wrongheaded approach. They don't need to tear down these pristine green spaces where there already exist spaces within the cities that they can build up. There's smart growth. There's a reason the green belt's there. Once you develop this green space, you take away the farmlands, you take away the wetlands, you can never put that back. So you're basically killing a piece of the land and the country. So we are totally against that. We weren't consulted on that. They say we were consulted, but we weren't.
What about on a local level, though? I mean, down in Brighton, there's that development on the shores of Lake Ontario that they had done an archaeological dig and found significant archaeological artifacts. There's also ongoing development taking place in across Northumberland County. What are you going to be doing locally to protect and assert your land rights?
Well, we're definitely ramping up our consultation coordinator's position. So we're going to expand from a single consultant to a whole department. So this is our plan moving forward, so that we will have, say, archaeological field representatives, people that we can send out in the field to observe what's going on. Because it's not enough to just get there, say that they're going to protect our burials and our archaeology. So we want to have eyes on the ground where we can actually see this. By having a consultation department, we can have as many fields assistance as we need, as many consultants, because every day we're getting emails. So our consultation coordinator is currently swamped. I can see how much she's doing, so she's amazing. But it'd be great to take some of that burden off by bringing in more people, so that we can do this without letting anything slip through the cracks.
Orange Shirt Day is gaining within public's consciousness. More and more people know what it is and wish to honor it. Yet, the other day, I went into Walmart and they were selling Orange Shirt Day t-shirts. And when you go online, it appears there are so many businesses now that are selling the shirts and other items with different designs and so on. Do you worry that the meaning of Orange Shirt Day is getting lost in the commercialism?
Well, that is a very good question. So when you're going to purchase your orange shirt, there's a few considerations you should have. Firstly, is it made by an Indigenous artist? Is the company that made it Indigenous? And most importantly, are the profits and the proceeds coming from the sales of the shirt going to the survivors of residential schools? So unless they're hitting those points, you're probably not doing a good thing by buying these shirts, especially if you're buying it from like a brand from Walmart where they're made in, overseas, and all the profits are going to Walmart and these overseas company, and not a dime is going to residential school survivors. So the whole key is to make sure that the any profits after you make these shirts are going to the survivors. So that was always the intention. So if you do have to go with the non-Indigenous supplier, ask, see if the profits are going to the survivors, and get a little bit of proof too, because they might just say, oh, of course they are, but they might not know themselves. So it's very important to know where your shirt comes from and where it's going.
You think Orange Shirt Day advances truth and reconciliation?
I definitely believe that it's both of those. It's reconciliation and the fact that we're engaging the larger Canadian population. It's a day for us to talk about the schools. We should be talking about it every day, but at least we have one day where the whole country is coming together to try to learn. We are finding less and less pushback from the larger population that we first did. Like the comments that we received originally were pretty bad from a segment of the population. So every year it gets less and less, and the turnouts supporting the day become more and more. So that act alone, that's how that's happening, that's reconciliation. And the truth aspect is coming from when a survivor will speak and tell their stories. And you still have these deniers who say that it didn't happen, that they're lying, that the schools were a good thing. They got an education, they got housed and cared for and fed. And that's all garbage. It's basically, if you send someone to a jail, you don't talk about how great of an experience they had in jail. It's ridiculous that people would think that there's anything positive about these schools. So we need to keep hammering that message home. And that's what Orange Shirt Day does.
How do you think people living in Northumberland County can take steps to advance meaningful truth and reconciliation beyond this one day?
Well, I think it comes from just an understanding. If you've got kids, let them know the history. Let them know that they're lucky that they weren't Indigenous and had to go to these horrible institutions. If you come across an Indigenous person who's not doing well off, you can probably bet that that person is either intergenerationally traumatized, or they're themselves a survivor of residential schools. So if you think of a six-year-old that was out of school in, say, 1998, they're not that old right now. You know, they're just in their early 30s. So you can't say that person wasn't in a residential school because they're young looking. They still very well could have been. So it's just having an understanding for your neighbors who are Indigenous and what they potentially have gone through, and try to meet them on their level of where they are at in their healing journey. So I think just a kindness and putting forth good energy where you're not rehashing the false narrative of the past. You're talking about things in a new way that people haven't talked about before. So that's something that every person can do.
If you could sit down next to anyone in the community and talk one-on-one with them, what message would you like to leave with them?
Well, I would like to say that, these schools were awful. And it is part of the past of Canada, and you really have to understand what Canada is as a country and how it was founded. This was all Indigenous territory at one point, and the nation building process of the new government of Canada was to annihilate Indigenous rights, Indigenous land rights, and to basically stick us in the basement. And residential schools was the main focus of this assimilation and genocide. that it wasn't something that they were trying to do to help us. You know, Canada has a very fraught history. We have to come to terms with it. It wasn't done in the proper way. And moving forward, we should try to build a future that it would have been had things been done properly in the first place.
Are there any special events planned for Orange Shirt Day this year?
I would say every First Nation and town has events. So here in Alderville, we're having a special day planned at the Health Services Building. We have a nice long round walking track that people can walk around and get off whenever they choose. We're going to have jingle dress dancing. We're going to have drumming. It's going to be a day that everyone is welcome to. Now, normally we walk down the 45 from the Health Services Building to our community center, but this year it's conflicting with the Roseneath Fair. So for out of abundance of safety, we're not going to be walking down the 45 while cars are trying to get to the fair. So that was just a recipe for disaster. So unfortunately, we can't do a walk this year. I've been invited to events in Cobourg, Port Hope. I'm going to be going there at 4 o'clock for their events that they're happening. So I'm going to try to get out there as much as possible. And the interesting thing about it being on a Saturday this year is a lot of events are happening on the 29th, seeing as it's a Friday. So in a lot of ways, we're having 2 days. So I've got the 29th and the 30th all booked for going out and seeing what the communities are doing and how they're acknowledging Orange Shirt Day.
Chief Tanner Simpson, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you very much.
That was Tanner Simpson, Chief of Alderville First Nation.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.